It's Mike Shope.
This guy's a real jerk.
And the Bulldog.
I'm sort of anal retentive, OCD kind of whack job.
On WGR.
Wow, way to hype us up right there. I can't miss another minute of this show. Bills and Dolphins, Sunday, week 9. Always a pleasure to welcome Armando Salguero to the show. He joins us now on the Wester Hotline. Do you feel like we've typecast you by only calling you, and it's pretty much every time when it's Miami? You cover the whole league. I mean, you know, a long time ago, this is our Dolphins guy, but Armando, you've spread your wings since then.
You know, I was thinking about that since last night, and maybe for several days before, because you guys are the only thing that I think about. And I was thinking maybe they'll ask me about Anthony Richardson, and that would make sense because it's not the Dolphins, it's not the Bills. But then I thought Anthony Richardson was born in Miami, so once again,
yes. Mm-hmm. And the Bills play them next week, by the way.
There you go. But either way, I'm typecast.
I do want to ask you about Richardson. I planned on it,
and still. I'm typecast.
Yes. We'll start with Tua. You know, here, I hope you like this. Tua is like maybe the example of a quarterback who was pulled like this, but then got there, you know, to whatever extent you want, however you want to define that. But did get back in, did get his money, has been to the playoffs. And one thing you're hearing a lot with Richardson is that, you know, the odds are not good for him to ever sort of get that opportunity from the Colts. Same kind of thing with Bryce Young. What kind of example does Tua represent in this?
Not a great one for Anthony Richardson, because Tua, you'll remember, struggled mightily under Brian Flores, right? The mm-hmm. coach who was part of the regime who drafted him number 5 overall. Flores tried to trade for Deshaun Watson to replace Tua. Yikes. and so one of the reasons that Flores and general manager Chris Greer had a falling out was Tua. When Flores was fired, the team embraced Tua and hired a coach who embraced Tua sight unseen. And the rest is history. You know, Tua obviously now is a much better player than he ever was under Brian Flores. The reason I'm giving you that picture is because it's hard to believe that Anthony Richardson can stay in the same system, under the same coach, with the same general manager, and suddenly get different results. And he would be, I think, the one who does that, because I can't think of anyone else who has been able to do that. Typically, a quarterback who succeeds either starts right away and overcomes the early struggles and just gets better, a.k.a. Josh Allen, or he is struggling early and goes somewhere else and then figures it out, a.k.a. Baker Mayfield, or he just sits for 3 years and then comes on and plays well. And those are the Jordan Loves and the Aaron Rodgers type mm-hmm. of people.
Well, maybe the only way that maybe he stays there but gets the new regime is if this play to Flacco blows up on Ballard and Steichen, and maybe they all get fired and a new regime comes in and says, Anthony Richardson is our quarterback.
Correct. And look, the chances of that happening are solid. And the reason I say that is because I've seen Joe Flacco throughout his career, and it's not 2011 anymore, okay? He hasn't won a playoff game since 2014. And, you know, he's getting this reputation as this great come-off-the-bench backup guy, come-off-the-couch, you know, mm-hmm. save-the-season guy. Joe Flacco is very good in small sample sizes, but when you make him your quarterback, which is what Shane Steichen kind of did today, in that it's not that he's the quarterback for right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's the quarterback for the foreseeable future. That means we're sticking with him for a while. They'll learn. Joe Flacco in bigger sample sizes is some good and some bad. And if you get to the playoffs, you have a certain ceiling, and it ain't the Super Bowl.
You might, I'm guessing you will maybe disagree with me here on this, Armando, but also on Richardson, was it the move to leave the field that cost him his job here? We've talked to different people here since then, and anybody you listen to seems to say the same thing, which is like, yeah, I've never seen that before, you know, for a quarterback to take himself out of the game. But I just want to put it out there. Like, it is an era where players do this. Running backs come out of every game. It's sort of par for the course, different for QB. And with the cautiousness about injuries that's out there, Richardson is somebody who would be well aware of this, having been injured a few times already in his young career. I don't know. When he spoke after the game and admitted that that's what he did, to me that just sounded like a guy who didn't realize that was such a terrible, you know, quote, terrible move.
Fair. And, you know, the Minnesota Vikings, who play the Colts this week, Brian Flores is their defensive coordinator, and he talked yesterday about that moment in preparation for Anthony Richardson, and this is what he said. He said, what I saw was a guy who pushed a 300-pound defensive lineman out of the way and then ran on that play, and was very athletic and was just beat. And so there's not a lot of quarterbacks who can just push 300-pound defensive linemen out of the way, basically almost lifting them off of him, and then run around for, you know, 30 yards or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I assume, I haven't done it because I'm not even going to walk to the kitchen here after this interview. I assume that takes a lot of energy and it gasses people, especially late in the game. Having said that, the Colts say that this had nothing to do with anything.
I don't buy that for a second.
Neither do I.
I think their quarterback basically told the world he doesn't know how football works. Like, I respect all that. Like, we are in an era of protecting guys more and all that. Everything Mike said. But quarterback, and he didn't say it is not running back or receiver or any other rotational position. And for Richardson to be so ignorant of that makes me wonder, what else are they experiencing in Indianapolis with him as their quarterback that he doesn't know? Because, like, that is a very entry-level, obvious thing that I would think a quarterback would know. And if he doesn't, it begs the question, what else doesn't he know? And is this just, like, the tip of an iceberg for them?
It's all fair and probably true. And you know what I would say to you? That's what they signed up for. They signed up for picking a guy who had started 13 games at the University of Florida, which is not enough, and then in his rookie season was out after 6 games. And now after 6 starts this season, you're benching him. So it's a quarterback that needs experience, that needs reps, that needs starts, and you're upset that he needs reps and needs experiences and needs starts, even though that's the guy that you drafted and you knew that's what you were getting.
Armando Salguero, our guest. You have somebody to go to the kitchen for you, get you your sun tea or something like this? You're living that well, by the way? I mean,
yes, I have a built-in manservant.
Yeah.
And he no.
Yes.
How about those Tesla robots? How about those things?
Oh, from the Metris to the Tesla robots. Armando's been with us many times over the years. Longtime Dolphins writer, now national writer, Outkick for Fox. Also a voter for the Pro Football Hall of Fame and All-Pro. I'm just reading right off your bio here, Armando, like I don't know this stuff. The Bills, so we talked before week 2. And I'm sure we covered this and maybe also previous to the season starting. Like, there are questions about this Bills team that we haven't had before. But here they are almost halfway through with a 3.5 game lead in, an AFC East that is kind of in shambles otherwise so far. makes for just that big a game for Miami here on Sunday. Are you surprised? I want to think impressed with what the Bills have done so far, and then we'll get into the Dolphins.
I'm surprised, and I'm impressed, and I am kicking myself because. So back way, way long ago, Cub reporter Armando covered the University of Miami in the late 1980s. And in 1988, that roster was loaded. They had, I think, 13 or 14 future first-round draft picks in the NFL. And they went to some bowl game and got blown out, I think, by – it was in the Fiesta Bowl by Penn State. They got beat by Penn State.
Okay.
In 1980, the next year – was that 86 or 87? In 1987, the next year, they weren't quite as loaded. They weren't quite as talented. But you know what? On the field, they were better. They didn't have the expectations on them. They didn't have the pressure. They didn't have all these other things, and they just got along better, and there was no divas. And a bunch of other stuff that matters, too, was going on beyond talent. And they won the national championship. And so I'm not saying that the Buffalo Bills, in a so-called rebuilding year with maybe perhaps less talent than what they've had, are going to win the Super Bowl. But it's sometimes easier to deal with stuff when you don't have to throw the ball to Stephon Diggs, 10 times or whatever. When you don't have to worry about whether Micah Hyde's neck is okay. When you don't. You know, all these other things that come with the names. And so maybe that's just what's going on with the Buffalo Bills.
Well, we did see Kansas City turn the trick 2 years in a row. In neither year did they look like the best team in the league going into the playoffs. Well, I guess actually 2 years ago they probably kind of did. It was just that it was expected that it would be kind of like this year for the Bills after trading Tyreek Hill, but they managed to win it both times. So I don't know, maybe there's some lesson in that, or maybe it's just a bunch of coincidences here. But yeah, I mean, the losses were obvious. The additions, I mean, Keon Coleman's sort of breaking through already here, Armando, just, you know, eight games in. And Amari Cooper to supplement is a fine idea as a Diggs replacement. If they had traded for Amari Cooper the day after they made the Diggs trade, we'd be like, okay, the receiving core's all set. You know, it took them until October to do it, but they got there.
Please ask me an Amari Cooper question because he's also from Miami.
Yes, I was going to say.
Further typecasting.
Coleman being only from Florida State, so not quite close enough to.
Yeah, not the same.
Not the same. Going into last week with Tua coming back, I thought you look at the AFC. There are going to be seven playoff teams. We're talking about Indianapolis here, like teams like Denver. There's room for somebody that has had a tough first half, Cincinnati, maybe two teams to get in. So I like the idea of the Dolphins just starting fast last week with his return and, you know, making it interesting at least. What did last week's loss to Arizona, which was a one-point loss, but did that signify something? Like, is that kind of like forget it after a loss like that or no?
Well, it's not forget it, and it doesn't signify anything great because the narrative in South Florida was we're getting Tua back, and so the national nightmare is over. We're going to score some points. We're going to win some games, and maybe we can string and stack a few, and things are going to be just fine. Thank you very much. And then the fourth quarter came, and they didn't score or keep the ball long enough on their, final possession with the lead. And then they punted away to Arizona, who then went on like a six-minute game-winning drive. So that is bad. The results to they scored more points than they had all season, but they ultimately didn't produce in crunch time on offense, and then they wilted in crunch time on defense. And you have to understand the context is this is a team that last year was 1-6. against teams with winning records, including the playoffs. And this is a team that this year, once again, against good teams, it's losing. And now it's losing against mediocre teams.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they could maybe do something, but oof. Nothing that we've seen suggests that that's going to happen.
How hard, if at all, would you have you been on McDaniel for not being able to figure out a way to just get the ball to Hill and Waddle, even without Tua there? I mean, I know any team that has a quarterback at that level, you know, the Bills without Josh Allen, but we've seen backups, at least the coaches and the schemes make them functional. It seemed like the Dolphins just could not put anything together, and it felt like McDaniel was maybe catching some heat for that.
He was. Fans are, you know, who were loving McDaniel as late as last season are kind of, you know, off that bandwagon. I was pretty hard on Chris Greer because they decided we have a quarterback that's had, you know, two concussions, and we don't know. We've seen him in that position on national television. We know what the problem is. We know what it can look like without him. And their answer to what if the worst happens was, we trust Skylar Thompson. And then Skylar Thompson was put in the position to actually earn that trust, and he failed miserably. Meanwhile, in the offseason, you know, guys like Flacco and others were going hither and thither to different teams as backups, veteran guys, guys with experience who expected to be backups and could be, you know, kind of a sounding board to a veteran. They all went different places. The Dolphins kept or stayed with Skylar Thompson. So he failed, and then they're looking in Baltimore's practice squad for Tyler Huntley, and then shockingly he failed. And when you have a quarterback with three concussions now, it might be a good idea to have a solid plan B just in case, and they didn't have it.
Dolphins in those four games scored 40 points, and if you include the second half against the Bills back in week two, they didn't score any points in that half either after Tua was injured. Armando, it is 73 and sunny here today. There's a Buffalo guy for you bragging on the weather, you know, when we're sort of self-conscious. But, I mean, it's a perfect day out.
You know, you guys know I love Buffalo, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Do you get up here for these games anymore?
Well, not this early in the season, and certainly not against when the Bills are playing the 2-5,
yeah. You know. Better games.
There
better games this
games.
Week. Right.
What's the best
there
game you've been to this year?
Other teams to be playing this year.
What's the best game you've been to this year?
Wow. I love the opener. The opener.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore and Kansas City. The Chiefs, man. I just love the Chiefs. I know that is blasphemy in Buffalo, but they just know how to win. And it doesn't matter that the world's best quarterback, sorry, Josh, is throwing more interceptions than touchdowns. It doesn't matter that the tight end is busy dating a rock diva or whatever she is and is having his age show a little bit. All they do is, you know, the kicker is giving speeches that's freaking people out. None of that matters. Their running back gets hurt. None of that seems to matter. What do they just do? They just win. It's uncanny. And it's pretty impressive, too.
I have to agree. Armando, as always, thank you for being so generous with your time. Can't wait to talk again.
All right, man. Be well.
Maybe we'll call you when the Bills are going to play Minnesota sometime.
Right.
Armando Salguero on the West Her hotline, you know, just to mix it up.
Right.
That Flacco point, it is about the backup quarterback you bring in. And the better he is, this is the Colts thing, mm-hmm. too. The better he is, the sooner people are going to be to look the other way, try to figure out if they maybe is better. The fans, the media, yep. somebody better on the team. Your point about how the Bills didn't, Cam Newton, Bills did right. not do that with Allen. And, of course, that can work either way, right?
Sure. I mean, it can save your season if the guy just completely is a bust. But it can also... I understand why people are you know, I've got a theory about what's happening with this guy. It is fast. I mean, he's not played a lot, and you do have a lot invested in him with the draft status. So the appearance, if not literally that it's happening, of pulling the shoot on him this soon, I mean, it's not organizationally super smart, but it might be warranted.
803-0550 for your calls. What's the most promising sign about the Bills season so far? Sal Capaccio will join us at 5. Lines are open for you now. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog, WGR.
He's always in the right spot. He's where he's supposed to be at all times. He works extremely hard. We just have a very, very good connection when we're out there. I understand where he's going. He gives me good body language. And he does a good job of catching the ball. You know, I know we've thrown some short ones to him. We've also thrown intermediate and thrown deep to him, too. So he can really do it all, and fortunate to have him on our team.
Josh Allen on Khalil Shakir. And the numbers are great, again, in terms of efficiency. 38 targets, 36 catches. At 11.7 yards per. Two scores. There's a victory lap you can, you can take whenever you're ready.
There's no other... there's no other receiver. Sal was talking about this on Monday. I think from a, you know, targets versus catching, you know, catch percentage standpoint, everyone else in like the top 25 in the league are all, it's all running backs.
Yeah.
Or maybe some tight ends. You know, and Shakir, a lot of that is parallel to the line of scrimmage too. I mean, he does get his share of easy targets, but that's a remarkable stat. 36 out of 38. You know, it was one thing when it was, right, his rookie year, I think I even noticed 13 for 13 in the preseason. Okay, you know, it's preseason. You know, it's been good. And even last year it was good. You think, like, oh, well, he's going to play more. That's probably going to really drop. But it's not. He's like almost 95%. It's incredible.
You really can't play him in fantasy, though. You really can't. I mean, who can you play among their receivers and tight ends and feel good? Kincaid, at least it's tight end where you can get zeros, you know, and it's yep. just always kind of life on the wire. And he gives you like 9 or 10 points. If he scores, even better. But Coleman is at a point, well, Cooper too. I benched Cooper in a league last week and I won because of it. Just a lucky one there. But Coleman's at a point where the big plays are such that he can give you like a ceiling, not CeeDee Lamb, but like a good 20-point game,
mm-hmm.
I think is in the range of outcomes for Coleman. And it probably would then also be for Cooper. I don't know if it is for Shakir. He has to get in the end zone, right? He's not option A.
Because it's, his yards per catch are not going to be big, so you're not going to get big totals. He got over 100 yards, and he has, this is the third time in his career now that he's done it. But it takes a lot of volume.
And nine for 107. I mean, that is definitely a playable fantasy week if you were to have done that.
Yeah.
And also, every other receiver in the NFL is officially injured and out for the year.
Well, that's too bad.
So many guys. What a tough year it's been. It's just different this year, Bulldog. Like it's usually sort of the so called dusty running backs. They get hurt, and you want the rookie backups, and you want just to be exposed. It happened with McCaffrey, who is coming back apparently now, by the way. But you want to have that backup handcuff guy that steps in when the 28, 29-year-old running back goes down, which we sort of treat as inevitable. But it isn't, and not only has that not happened much this year, Derrick Henry, Barkley, Mixon, Jacobs, to an extent, are all doing well, or really well. And at receiver, guys, many of the top three rounds receivers have just not been it. Whether that's Puka being hurt, he's back. Kupp being hurt, he's back. Hill and Waddle, not through any fault of their own, but their quarterback left, right. And they were just turned to zero. Does
Nico Collins belong on this
Nico
list?
Nico Collins. Yeah, like a lot, and others. I mean, a lot of these guys.
Running back-wise, you're at McCaffrey and Pacheco, if you want to include a Pacheco. Yep. Like, those are two big-name, you know, contending team-level running backs that have been out for a while. But Pacheco will come back at some point. I don't know when. It's not like
they say that.
Really missing him. I don't know. I mean, Kareem Hunt seems to be doing fine off the street. So whatever.
ETN a little bit. ETN.
Yeah, right. I saw something about him coming back this week, that they're optimistic he can make it back this week.
So many of those receivers, though, they're not all injured. Like, DJ Moore, that was supposed to be perfect. Finally, DJ Moore gets a good quarterback. Yeah. First time in his career. And just not much is happening there at all. So, kind of upside down. Now, Diggs, that's over for the year.
Right.
Christian Kirk, down the draft order a bit, but that's over for the year.
Brian Thomas Jr.'s hurt, not permanently, but he's going to miss some time now, right?
Evans and Godwin.
Right.
Godwin was, like, leading the league in stuff. Just on and on. 803-0550. Let's go to Ryan next. Hi, Ryan.
Good afternoon, guys. I love your show.
Thank you.
Especially Bulldog when he gets upset the Sabres.
Love that, too.
Yes. So, you guys, I got out of the car for a second, and you said, what is the highlight thus far of the year? I got 3 points. One is these Billsy losses where they lose in the second half, like 2 years ago. You know, they're doing it, right? I heard someone call in the other day and said, we got to put it together in the first half. Why? It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And they are putting teams to sleep in the second half. I think that's really good for the hopes of beating the Chiefs. Because that's, you know, this is how it always was. It was like, oh, second half, you know, and it's just a Billsy loss. Number two is Ray Davis. I mean, we're going out getting a wide receiver core. Look at this guy. Give me that guy. Give me that guy at the goal line every time. And number one by far, and then I'll hang up, is Chris Brown on the commentary. What does this guy drink in the morning where he's so electric? I've listened to John Murphy. I've listened to Van Miller. I went to games with my grandparents. We would leave early because they were losing to the Jets. And all of a sudden, this guy is making things happen on the radio. I love talking to Chris Brown when I get a chance to call in with Tasker. But listening to him on Sundays, I mean, if you're not a Bills fan, you are now. In Mr. Rogers' neighborhood? I think that's a line when they took down Rogers a couple times in the Jets game. I love it. I love his energy. But I like the Bills being able to put it together in the second half. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Good. I echo everything you had to say about Chris. I'm so happy for him. I've known him since the stations joined together in the winter of 99 or 2000, whenever that was. He was working here at the time. So I'm thrilled for him, and I'm glad you're enjoying his play-by-play. I you probably heard me talking about starting better. I don't have to be coming from behind all the time. I do like that they have put some teams, like the caller's phrasing, to sleep in the second half. I mean, their points against in the second half isn't as great as I thought it was. Arizona scored 11 in the fourth quarter on them. But they've had some games here. Even the Houston game that they lost, it was just field goals after halftime. After the first quarter even, right? It was 14, two touchdowns in the first quarter, and then field goals the rest of the way for Houston.
And Arizona had a kickoff return.
Oh, right. That's right. So it wasn't even the defense that got exploited there. Right.
Yeah, the Bills have given up exactly 10 points in half their games. That'd be 4 out of 8. I also like a good start. I don't know why that, you know, I don't think it's really who cares if they're getting down in games. You have, coming back always gets all the credit and the glory. You have more control over the rest of the game if you get a lead. And that's just better. You know, what happened in Seattle? They just got a lead. It was comfortable. You can rest guys in these situations, or you don't have to just completely max out, pedal down at the end of games because you're behind in these games. Definitely the way to play it if you have a choice. They've had a strange season for the number of games, good and bad, that were pretty much over by the third quarter. So whatever, I mean, the caller brought up close games, Billsy losses or whatever. I mean, I wouldn't use that word anymore. They've lost some close games, kind of famous ones, but I was never one who thought they really had like a structural flaw that exposed. And I would say about this year, that has just not been shown. I mean, they have not – the Jet game where the Jets are missing a field goal, you know, like Houston is the one, because Houston, you have the ball there at the end in a tie, and they misplayed it. So you could count that.
Mm-hmm.
But half their games or more have just kind of been
easy. Five of the eight. The Baltimore game is in there, too, is over in the third quarter.
Yep.
But, you know, you're on the wrong side of it. But five of the eight games have been that. Yeah, the four of the big wins, Miami, Jacksonville, Tennessee, Seattle, and then the Baltimore game fits that criteria, too, is over pretty early.
How does this week feel?
Just put your boots on and go to work. This is a team that has not been able to touch you. So just be buttoned up and take care of it.
There's always a way to – there's always a reason to worry.
Of course.
If you want that.
Tyreek Hill's never had more than 53 yards against the Bills as a Dolphin. He's had some days as a Chief. But as a Dolphin, he's not had more than 53 receiving yards. You know what I think when I heard that after they beat them the last time? Like, wow, credit to McDermott. That's an amazing stat. That's one of the best receivers in the league. There was talk of him going for 2,000 yards last year, and McDermott's defense shuts him down. Great. Here comes another game. He's great. Tua's back. Like, is this the 140-yard game?
It.
Like, right? It's like, it, football can definitely do that to you. Like, I'm not assuming the Bills will just walk over this team and shut down their offense like they have pretty recently, almost always done. But I'm not walking into this game full of anxiety about it. I feel like they're the better team. Go, it's at home. Go take care of it.
I saw their Bet Online odds to make the playoffs, the Bills, today, -5,000.
Wow.
Or 98%, that would be the equivalent, 98% chance. So if you need $1, put $50 on that. Right. If you really need $1, that's what $50 pays you 51.
Yeah.
If they make it, which if it's such a sure thing.
Maybe use that for one of those bets that you need to unlock a bunch of bonus money or something. You have to wait a while, though.
You sometimes see bets like that for big money. Like this would be $50,000 to win 100. No, 1,000. 50 to 1. $50,000 to win 1,000.
Okay.
Shouldn't there be a better way than betting $50,000 on something to win $1,000, or $5,000 to win $100 if you prefer?
I might sooner hold up a convenience store than bet that money to try to win $1,000.
I think I like
if I needed money that badly, I think I would turn to a life of crime before I would bet that.
A life of crime. I think I like $5,000 to win $100 the most.
Right.
$5,000. Here's $5,000. If the Bills make the playoffs, you're going to give me $5,100. That does not. Plus, they get to hold your money for 2 months.
Right. It's no.
Does not seem like a great investment.
No, you're missing out on all kinds of opportunities to lose that other ways.
Yeah. Right. you get to hold your money if you don't bet it on other things. Only in that case. Sal coming up at 5. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. WGR. Met a friend after yesterday's show for about an hour. Hockey game on in the bar. Saw Ovechkin score twice quickly in the eventual Capitals win over the Rangers last night. Just kind of classic Ovechkin goals, too.
Right. One was a shot from above the dot, and the other was like a goal mouth cross ice pass.
He still got it. Like, he's going to get there.
Absolutely going to. He's on a pace to, I think, after last night, to score exactly the amount that would tie the record. Like, if he were to score at this pace
this year,
the rest of the year.
Oh, that's ahead of what we thought.
Yeah. I think 41 might be the. He's on a 41 goal pace, and I think that's what he needed to tie the record. I saw a bunch of screen grabs of stuff from last night after that happened. So, yeah, I mean, if he even picks it up a little, he could finish it off this year. But if not, certainly at some point, maybe early next year.
I know when we talked about this the last time, the Capitals come to Buffalo much earlier in the season than that. Like any sort of chance at the end of the season where the Sabres might be involved, and that their visit here is in December. The Sabres go to Washington January 6th, and there'd be one more in here somewhere. Oh, they come here March 30th, actually. Mm. No, sorry, that's in Washington. I'm looking at the Washington schedule, okay, not the Sabres schedule.
But the Sabres
go to Washington March 30th. That's right.
That's got to be close to the finish line of the season. It's got to be like game 75 or something.
Game 73.
That. Okay.
That's right. Marc-Andre Fleury, by the way, last night in Pittsburgh. Andrew said he was at the game.
Mm, nice.
He tweeted about how the people around him were all just rooting for Fleury.
Sure. The Penguins are, I mean, they should not be good.
Well, we've had that before.
I know. Well, but we've had them missing the playoff 2 years in a row, yeah, which right. is where they are going into this year. And I don't know. Good luck.
Right now, they have the second worst points percentage in the NHL. 3-7-1. Only San Jose is below that.
Yeah.
Sabres at 4-5-1, 4-6. Next game, Friday night at home against the Islanders. Maybe I'll go as a hockey player to the Halloween party. I've got jerseys. Sure. I don't have a helmet.
Right.
My daughter has helmets. That's not going to help me. Pads.
Yeah.
Like I could wear some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Skates.
Let me dress up.
Or skates.
Let me dress up as my son. I'm going to put on. Yes. I have two full sets of goalie gears and countless goalie masks, and there's probably a dozen goalie sticks all in the basement, just gathering dust.
What you've got to do, well, you could bring them all in and come as a goalie stick collector or something. What you've got to do, just you put on the sports gear, but you got to come up with something clever with it to make it. You know, I could come in tomorrow if I had I could ask Sal. If I had a Yankees road jersey, I've got a hat, I'd come in tomorrow as that fan last night and just start knocking stuff out of people's hands. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, there's Amanda on her phone. I just come over and just whack it right out of her hand. Just try to actually not even do that, but just sort of grab her wrists right. very strongly and pull the phone away and then throw it to the ground or something.
There's your move.
Just do that for the whole party.
Yeah.
Oh. I'd win all the awards. I'd win all the Halloween party awards. I just came in as that fan and just started breaking things. What? Who was a worse person in society than a guy like that?
The idiots applauding them. I can't even get over. They are like the quintessential delusional fanboy man baby. Jerk offs. I can't get over it. Like them. Wow, we've been talking for years. You know, we're here all the time. And if it comes in our zone, we got to D up. What the hell? Who dropped you when you were three? What are you talking about? We got to D up. Oh my god! I'm not even going to get into like the guy yanking at. What, you could have dislocated Mookie Betts' wrist for Cripe's sakes. Pulling him the way that it was so idiotic, but like the idea that we were waiting for this moment. I assume you must have a job because you're paying for tickets right on the first baseline, you know, at Yankee Stadium for a World Series game. I weep for all of us. Like I know our clientele is sports fans. Please, if you're out there and like you think you can do that or should be doing that and preparing to do that, please stop. You're not on the right side. It's not a good plan.
It's never good when the fans want to enter the game.
Not a good plan. We gotta D up. What are you, nine? I wish so badly I'd found out if he had like a Yankee jersey with like Munson like as a nameplate or something. Like just, oh my god, be a bigger loser.
That would do it.
Like
a name on the back of a Yankee jersey would do it.
Yeah, three, Ruth.
Ruth,
good one.
He did apparently get banned from the stadium tonight.
Yeah. The. The difference in the way that
like these two bozos and like Bartman. It was like a lifetime ago. And I know it's not exactly the same thing. You know, Bartman kept the Cubs from winning, and this was Yankee. It's still, like, Bartman's life was annihilated after that. He didn't want any of that, but he got it. These guys are, like, at a bar, and ESPN's running reporters down there to talk to them. What the hell happened to us? What happened to us? I got thrown out of the odd in 1996. A giant metal door slammed behind me, and I was on the street. Milt Northrup was not waiting to talk to me.
Are we sure?
The Schover sounded older. I wanted just the right guy for that.
Perfect. Milt is the right guy for that.
God almighty.
Sal Capaccio after this timeout. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.